Welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name's Mark Cunaberti. Today's show 341, entitled "It's the Economy, Stupid." So discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk, of course. And the views expressed here are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. Controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it, your lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. So yeah, it's the economy, stupid, for sure. So, well, the Dow, you know, this sector rotation is just, I have to say, it's just brutal. One day the technology stocks go up, the next day they go down. One day grocery stores and what we call defensive stocks go up, and the next day they go down. And so, yeah, it's definitely here, there, and everywhere. Bitcoin been slaughtered a little bit, and the gold and silver kind of along the same lines, with some erosion in all those indexes. Not a suggestion to buy or sell any security. Of course, no one can forecast market directions. Me neither. I've been wrong plenty of times, for sure. But yeah, so the Dow still floating, not at an all-time high, fairly well, at least close to it. But Fed's announcement's going to be coming out this week, probably by the time you hear this show, because I am recording it, I think, a little bit earlier than the day we're going to broadcast it. We'll see what happens, but inflation, obviously, is the order of the day. We're seeing massive inflation everywhere, something that we predicted on the show for the longest period of time. But it's interesting, some of the traditional inflation hedges are not moving much. Gold usually is a traditional inflation hedge, and it's kind of been in a downtrend. Same with silver. And so, yeah, it has been a difficult market for sure. Don't panic, obviously, and don't go overly zealous, for sure. And so, interesting poll out last week, out from one of the news medias, Fox, that indicated 2/3 of the nation think the economy is being mishandled. And also a commentary from the DailyReckoning.com, a webpage that I read, for sure. Anyway, if we keep going, 4/5 of the nation may think that the economy is being mishandled. Kind of interesting to see that, seeing as the feds are printing so much money to throw at everybody and everything to try to handle the economy. It's been always my opinion that you can't handle economy. You just have to watch to see what happens. But people still try to handle it, which is rather interesting. Any case, so yes, it is interesting what is happening in the markets and in the economy. And so we'll take a look at that today. So, you know, it wasn't long ago that when President Trump was in office, half the nation's populace thought that he was our biggest mistake. Now we see the other half of the nation, or many argue that his replacement is now wrecking the economy that Trump reportedly may not have rescued from certain self-destruction. That's an opinion, commentary only, FYI only. I'm not saying he rescued it from self-destruction, but some argued that he did, Trump did, and that now that Biden is wrecking it. Again, that's not my opinion. It's just the commentary of newscast today. It's probably a different half of the people thinking the economy is now in the toilet. The other half of the people in the nation probably think it's doing great. So this is likely falling across party lines, for sure. No surprise there. It's almost, and I hate to say this, it's almost like it's the left side of the aisle versus the right side of the aisle, no matter what we see. Certainly a sad state of affairs, if that is indeed true. Started off with the election, for sure, and then it went into COVID, masking, self-distancing, self-isolation, shutdowns. One half of the nation thinks one way, the other half thinks the other way. The economy has some new problems, newer than it did two or three years ago. Inflation is obviously not good, as in it is rising. There's an unemployment and available jobs mismatch. We have high unemployment, but companies are still seeking to fill staffing shortages. And there's a supply shortage. That's the new norm. We have supply issues all along the supply chain. And one issue of supply will affect another one. So if you have an issue of a chip that's in a phone, then the phones are going to be in short supply as well. A couple of years ago, many were complaining about income inequality, how the economy and political stages were being handled, and living wage. That was an argument as well. Now, not that those concerns have been solved. Mind you, they haven't. Indeed, they may be worse than ever. But now, with rising inflation and the majority of businesses looking for staff, while also looking at their empty store shelves because of the supply issues, the economy is bending under the weight of all of it. The stock market doesn't seem to care about the problems that we may be seeing in the economy. It continues its stratospheric ascent from April of 2020. It's almost doubled. It has seen some hiccups along the way. I've written a few articles about the hiccups that it's seen and done a few shows about it. But it is definitely a bipolar back and forth behavior of stocks, which is making investors and advisors alike scratch their heads as they try to figure out why one sector is getting creamed while another sector might be rising, all the while reversing direction seemingly the next day or the next week or so, right? You've probably seen that in your portfolios if you own stocks. If not, you've probably just seen it in general life. It's almost like the market is reflecting the general mood of the nation's inhabitants, which is to say, let's go left. No, let's go right. No, let's just stand here and go nowhere. I can't say this is the only time I've witnessed crazy behavior in the stock market and our economy. I have many, many times over my last 50 years of trading this thing. But I must admit, it's certainly one of the craziest few years I've seen in a long while. In such turbulent times where little makes sense and forecasting a future direction of the market seems impossible due to its irrational behavior and, I might add, bipolar behavior, it's sometimes best just to lighten up if you have a portfolio. Just lighten up, take some risk off the table, and sit back and watch the show instead of being a reluctant participant in it. There's supposed to be a Santa Claus rally in December. Maybe, maybe not. There's supposed to be a January effect in January, maybe, maybe not. These things are rumored to be due, but we'll see. We've covered the January effect and the Santa Claus rally in previous shows and articles, so I won't get into them there. But both of those are thought to be positive events for sure. It is said that the market's job is to fool the most people at the most inopportune time when it is least expected. So I always say the market's job is to take your money, not make your money. It's run by professionals. For us to think that we can beat them is an attempt in futility. But however, I don't believe that the market really wants to take all your money all the time. You just have to be careful for sure. It is run by professionals. So small investor does have some advantages. We can get in and out without moving the market, et cetera, et cetera. So that said, one certainly gets the feeling, at least right now, and I have it at times, that there are many more people wondering what the heck is happening in the markets and indeed what's happening in the world than those that feel all warm and fuzzy about what's in our future. I don't know what the new year will bring, and neither does anyone else, but I suspect at least a few things may already be baked into our economic cake. Inflation will likely not go away. I think it's going to get a lot worse. If that happens, it will cause the Feds to have no choice but to raise interest rates, which may cause the markets to throw a hissy fit, which is to fall, maybe not, resulting in at least some scary moments for many investors as markets may plunge in response. I think Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, is sensitive to what he says can move markets. I mean, I would think that he would be very sensitive. And I think he is, but I think he's got inflation to deal with, and that's a serious problem. Contrary to what some might believe, however, the markets, once they have digested initial rate increases, in other words, people think that when the Feds raise rates, the markets will automatically fall. But historically, once the market digests the increase in interest rates, it has at times gone upward and by a lot. During the time of rate increases, people think the market will fall, and it usually does sell off in the beginning. But then during, if you look at historically, when rates rise, the markets tend to do a little bit better. And that's because rising rates means the economy is doing better, and we have to slow it down by rising rates and getting a cap on inflation. Think of raising rates by the Feds as a medicine for inflation, which eventually may improve, that's what they're hoping, improve the economy's overall health and well-being. This may translate into higher stock prices in late 2022 or beyond. May. Maybe not. Remember, nobody can forecast markets at any time. However, certain things like clouds indicating a chance of rain, certain symptoms and events occurring now could lead to things that are changing for the worse in the future. Maybe. This will probably, the things that at least I'm seeing, will likely add even more uncertainty to an already uncertain market. So what do we do? It's always best just to lighten up on your risk, maybe go to more cash, and if the markets go up and you still have some positions, then your portfolio will participate. If it does sell off, you won't get hurt as badly. You can always go to all cash, then you won't make anything, you won't lose anything, but then you have inflation to worry about eroding the buying power of your cash. Okay, so we'll be right back to continue the show. It is show 341, Money Matters. It's the economy, stupid. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Stay tuned. We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old Man Depression, you are through. You've done us wrong. We never see an headline, but a red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can let that guy right in the eye. We're in the money. Come on, my honey. Let's spend it, spend it, spend it right on bond. Okay, and welcome back to Money Matters, show number 341, entitled, It's the Economy, Stupid. So while we're away from break, we got some news from the Federal Reserve, from Jerome Powell, and that the market was kind of waiting for this, whether he was going to raise interest rates or not, and do the infamous taper of quantitative easing. So he is going to increase the taper and hold interest rates steady for now. So he is concerned about inflation, and obviously, if they are concerned about inflation, what they do is they raise rates to try to rein in rising prices. When you raise rates, it kind of puts a damper on the economy, and people don't borrow as much, and they don't spend as much. Debt gets a little more expensive. The taper is a little bit more convoluted. We've talked about quantitative easing and what a taper is. Basically, quantitative easing is when they buy mortgage-backed securities and debt from the banking system. So if the banks hold a lot of mortgages and they want to get money into the system and the banks don't want to hold all these mortgages or whatever else debt they have, they go to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve buys this stuff from them. And for, oh gosh, ever since March, they have been doing this quantitative easing by the month, anywhere from $40 to $80 billion a month. So this is outside of all the money creation that they're doing. all the stimulus programs and bailouts and all the other things that they give away. This is money that goes straight into the banking system. Basically, they take the debt off of the banking system and they give them money. And they've been doing this from $40 to $100 billion a month, every month, for a couple of years now. They did a lot of it during 08 and 09, and they never really stopped doing it. And so when they buy $40 to $80 billion a month of debt, that's basically liquefying or providing a lot of liquidity to the banking system. So a taper just means they're going to slow down the amount of buying. So it's not, when they buy this debt, they eventually want to unwind it. In other words, they eventually want to sell it back into the market. They don't want to keep the debt on their books, but they basically can't dump it back into the market because then other debt would not sell because it would be a big supply of it. So what they do is they buy all this stuff and they just let the terms of these mortgages run out. So they wait until you pay it off. And so it is kind of convoluted, but they're going to taper. So they're not going to be buying as much debt from the banking system, but they're still going to be doing it. Now, there was a time, most of the time, they don't do this. They don't do quantitative easing. They don't buy any debt from the banks. So they just let the banks do their thing. And if the banks take on debt, well, they take on debt, and they make interest from it, and it's too bad if it doesn't get paid. But they've been doing tapering. I mean, they've been doing quantitative easing for the longest time since 08 and 09. And during COVID, they've done a ton of it, $80 billion, $60 billion, $100 billion a month. It goes into what we call the, partially goes into what we call the repo market, the repurchase agreement market. We've covered all of this. It's very convoluted, very questionable and convoluted, so I won't get into it too much in detail today. But basically, when they say tapering, they're basically going to cut back on the amount of debt they buy from the banking system. And so there you go. So the market kind of liked it. You know, at first it didn't know how to digest this news, but then it kind of liked it, kind of shot up. And so we'll see what the next days bring as far as their response to the Federal Reserve's announcements today. So we'll just go have to see. So I can't say that I agree with quantitative easing. I really can't say that. I can't say that it should be done. I don't think it should be because it's basically bailing out the banking system. And it's also providing a lot of money into the banking system, which will cause more inflation. And we've already got enough of that, right? So they've got two things going. Flooding money into the market to keep the banking system liquid and threatening to raise interest rates to put it damper on the inflation that they themselves are partially causing by doing all this quantitative easing. So what we do is we do quantitative easing and buy all this debt from the banks and pour the money into the banking system, and that causes inflation, and you raise interest rates to try to kill that off. So basically, yeah, I'm doing a bad thing and I'm doing something else to try to correct what I'm doing. So kind of crazy. I wanted to mention, most investors and advisors don't understand or perhaps even thought about the math of stock losses and how market crashes and rallies affect your profits and gains. Here's an example. Suppose we have a portfolio and it's worth $8,000. And then we grow the portfolio by buying good stocks and it grows to $10,000. So we had $8,000, we grew it to $10,000. That means we have $2,000 in profit, okay? Now, imagine the market drops by 10% and takes the stock down with it by the same 10%. So we had $10,000, two of it was profit, and our stock drops 10% in a market correction. So $10,000 worth of stock reduced by 10% would be $9,000, right? So now the account is valued at $9,000. Now you noticed that the profit of $2,000 was cut in half. Simply put, a 10% correction in the stock price wiped out 50% of the profit. What this illustrates is the profit in your portfolio is wiped out first in market crashes. In other words, you may only see a 2% correction in your stocks, but that 2% could translate to 10% of your profit. So the profits always go first. So remember, this particular account had 2,000 in profit. It was worth 10 grand. We had a 10% correction. The stock dropped, the account dropped to 9 grand, but it wiped out half of your profit. So you have to remember, what this illustrates is that your profit is wiped out first in market crashes. Although you might look at a 10% correction in your head and say, well, it's only 10% of my stock portfolio, but it may take out a larger chunk of your profits. So remember, profits disappear first. A larger correction of, say, 20% might wipe out all your profits. Not a pleasant thought, for sure, but it's important that you realize that this is how market corrections work. They take your profits first. The market may crash by 5%, and it may take 30% of your profits, depending on how much profit you have. Doing a simple math and knowing your portfolio's net deposits, what you've put in, and net withdrawals, what came out in fees, commissions, or your personal withdrawals, and then having an accurate figure on what you have gained, how much did I make in the account since its inception, and I have a running balance or a running gain, you can be better informed on what a market rally or a crash is doing to your account. And it's always good to know if the market is moving up or down, what's it doing to your profit, because that's the main thing. And of course, what's it doing to the principal, what's it doing to all the deposits that you made. Investors who don't perform this task and keep a running balance, okay, so you know how much have I put into my account overall, you may not have a handle on what the overall market movements are doing and what you've gained or what you've lost in the portfolio. And if we have a setback in the market, what has it done to your profit? Has it taken a bigger chunk of your profit? Usually, like I said, when the market corrects, your profit will disappear first. Now, some investors may look at a month-to-month statement or even an annual statement, but few track the total losses or gains over a long period of time. Now, I will say that some stock portfolio statements, you know, if you get them from Schwab or somebody, they'll show you what your gains and losses are from the very beginning. And that's what you want to kind of look for. Then you add up all the gains and add up all the losses, so you have a net gain or a net loss for all your holdings. This will also help you for tax planning. You know, you have to, at the end of the year, if you've got some gains, you want to sell some stocks that are losers, so you have some losers as well, and so you balance that out. Looking at a month-to-month statement, some brokerage firms do give you that running balance, and some don't. So you should always remember that a minor correction in the market or a minimal stock price retreat in your portfolio may be making huge dents in the profitability of your account. Profits are the first to go in a crash, the first to go, and they reflect the entire downward movement of the price correction and more. In other words, if a market corrects 10% and it wipes off $1,500 off your portfolio, all that $1,500 is profit, all of it. It doesn't deed into the principal yet. So the math is, when you have a market correction, it's probably hurting your profit more than you think. Profits are the first to go in a crash, and they do reflect the entire downward price correction of whatever's happening. Profits disappear by a multiple of the market decline because of this math. In other words, if the market corrects 10%, you may lose 50% of your profit, depending on how much profit you have, of course. On the way up, proportional gains in the stock price are profits. So in other words, if your stock price gains 10%, and that 10% is profit, so on the way up, you gain 1-to-1. On the way down, you may lose 3-to-1 because the profits are going to go first. This is, in my opinion, because how this works, is why minimizing losses is more important than looking to gains. You first have to minimize losses. Losses are rule one of Warren Buffett's two rules. Don't lose money. Rule two, don't forget rule one. If it is why that stock declines can do more damage to your portfolio than first thought, because profits always disappear first in the correction. For this reason, some sort of loss prevention strategy, in my opinion, should always be considered. It is said that markets always come back, but prolonged and severe market crashes have, in the past, occasionally taken years to get back to even. Admittedly, most market routes are temporary blips in an ever-increasing market. I mean, over time, the market always comes back, right? But who's to say the next crash won't take down the market significantly and then keep it down for years or even decades? That has happened. Sometimes it'll take years to get back to even again. Because no one knows whether this type of wealth-obliterating market crash will occur, no one knows if it will occur and when and how far it will go. Do not consider some type of exit strategy is, in my opinion, playing with fire and subsequently your life savings. Most professional traders, these guys that trade huge amounts of money for their own accounts, and portfolios managers, they use some sort of stop loss, some loss minimizing strategies for their own portfolios. So my question would be, if these professionals always use stop losses, they always limit losses, they will always cut their losses at some point. If the professionals do that, and these guys are trading with huge amounts of money, if you, or if you have an advisor, have not considered following what the pros do, as it pertains to some sort of exit strategy or some sort of loss protection to protect against a severe wipeout if it happens, the question that I would ask is, why don't you? In the one in a million chance that we get a prolonged correction of 50, 60, 70, 89% in the market, somebody said, well, that'll never happen. Yeah, but if it does happen, it'll wipe out everything you've made in the last how long you've been investing. You say, oh, I've been investing 10 years. Well, you get a huge market crash of 80%, it'll wipe that completely clean. So you may have celebrated for 9 years about all the profits that you made. But if we get a huge, horrendous crash, and nobody can tell you whether we'll get it or not, it could wipe out everything you have, your complete wipes, the life savings. It's possible. Whose is to say that it's not going to happen? Okay, so we'll look to the markets. And wrap up the show. This has been show number 341 of Money Matters, called The Economy Stupid. It's The Economy Stupid. Our economy is, this is some sort of world we live in for sure. So 341, I'll be back in 2 weeks. And of course the news, Money Matters News, airs every week. You can keep up with that. And our website is moneymanagementradio.com. Everything is free. Moneymanagementradio.com. Everything is free. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. And remember, views expressed are my opinions only, and they do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. Is not meant as investment advice. And indices mentioned may be unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. That means if I mention the Dow, you can't buy the Dow as an index. Okay, you can buy the stocks in it, but not the whole index. And investing has a risk of loss, so make sure you are willing to bear loss when investing. If you're not willing to bear loss, check out FDIC-insured products, etc. Okay, my name is Mark Cunaberti. Thanks for listening, and have a great week and a great day.